Thanks,
Sonia. Now we understand why identity is so important from a security perspective. How do we keep people's identity private, especially if that links them to things like COVID-19 test results? To talk about maintaining privacy in our technology responses to COVID-19, please welcome my guests, Troy Hunt and Elaine Van Bergen. Welcome to Build Digital, both of you. How are we doing?
G'day.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Let's start by introducing ourselves. Elaine, I'll start with you. Why don't you tell everybody what your role is at Microsoft?
Yeah, I work in the Fast Track for Azure team, where I manage the data team for the Asia region.
Great. So what kind of things do you do in Fast Track?
Essentially, we work with customers around ensuring they have the right architectures in place, unblocking issues they may hit during their production deployments, and just generally helping people love Azure.
Fantastic. And Troy, you're not a Microsoft employee, but you are one of our MVPs and our regional directors. Tell people why security and privacy is one of the things that you're so passionate about.
Yeah, so I just have confusing Microsoft titles. I'm passionate about the security and privacy side of things because it prevails across so much of everything we do. Every time we build software and put it out there on the web, we have to think about security. Every time we collect people's personal information, we have to think about privacy. And I'm sure a lot of what we talk about today is now going to get into this space of why privacy in particular is so important at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, as technologists, I know that we have a natural tendency to want to fix things with an app. It's what we run to. It's what we know in terms of how we can help out. And what we've seen with COVID-19 is different entities, whether they're individuals, whether they're government agencies, start to use apps to help us manage this global pandemic. So let's just talk about some of the privacy and confidentiality principles around that. What are some of the good general principles, Troy, from your perspective, that a government or a health department, say, would need to stick to if they're looking at using technology for this kind of thing?
I think one of the sort of fundamental principles here, particularly in privacy and COVID-19, is this idea of data minimization and only having what we need for as long as we need it. And particularly as we start to talk about the interactions we have with other people, which of course is one of the big discussion points at the moment, there's a big question around what do we actually need to build useful applications and how can we get away from this sort of traditional way of thinking, which is data is valuable, collect all the data, have as much as we could possibly want. And one of the things that really does for us is it allows us to have a narrative with the general public as well about this whole idea of you cannot lose what you do not have. Don't give us things that we don't need and then we can never lose it. There will never be a data breach of information that you have never provided in the first place. So I think that's really important as a guiding principle.
Yeah, that's great. And Elaine, I know that you've been involved in an app. Can you tell us just a little bit about that project that you were involved in and some of the guiding principles that you had to work through on that project?
Yeah, we've been working with New South Wales Health Pathology around a system that's providing COVID-19 test results to patients. And as part of that, obviously, there's a lot of security and privacy principles ensuring that information's kept internally very, very safely and securely.
Yeah, and so one of the things we've seen about things like being transparent and open with people, it's always hard, though, isn't it, to try and get across the safety and security of the technology that you're building to a non-technical audience. And what we're starting to see is a lot of people having an opinion about whether these apps are good, whether they're safe, whether we should use them. And, you know, lots of people that might not be quite so qualified are weighing in on this debate about what's safe and what's a good approach. Troy, how do you think we combat that? Is there a way that we can educate the public in a good way to help them trust these applications that we're building?
I was just laughing at the premise that maybe there are people that are not qualified enough jumping on the internet having opinions about things. Welcome to my life. Look, I think one of the really interesting things of the discussion at the moment is that the narrative to me often seems to be wrong. The narrative is very much about can we trust the government? Should we have these applications installed? Should we give them this data? And it's very, very, very much in isolation about this one topic of discussion. And what's often missed is how this fits into the broader ecosystem of privacy and how it would change things if, for example, you didn't run the app. So, for example, I think people sort of take into some of the world's largest social media platforms and complaining about privacy. There is a little bit of irony in that whole thing. So, you know, I think the discussion here is partly about what is my holistic privacy profile. And then the other bit as well is that particularly when we talk about things like contact tracing, that a lot of your information, if you do ever test positive, app or no app, is going to be digitized. This is the way it works. It will go into a computer system somewhere. And what we really should be talking about here is how do things change with app, without app, as opposed to saying what is this sort of this one holistic or this sort of one isolated position, which is if I run the app, this is what's going to happen. So I'd really like the narrative to be much more around how does everything change from one position to the other, as opposed to just looking at this one thing in isolation, because it's just that's just a roundabout way of looking at it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And Elaine, I know that the app that you worked on wasn't a contact tracing app, but it was around patients and test result data. Is that any different than me just going to the doctors and getting my data entered into a computer system anyway?
Yeah, and we actually built the back-end processing APIs behind it. So, you know, it's a very kind of glued together piece. And yeah, I guess the interesting thing is we talk a lot about educating the public around how a lot of these things work. But I think there's also a really big element for educating technologists about how to talk to these things to the public, because I think that's part of the issue here. We're seeing a lot of this information's coming out using very technical terms and, you know, talking about particular settings in different operating systems and all kinds of different pieces. And I guess that's a big factor around it. If we can actually educate the technologists and people producing these apps to talk to people in normal human, you know, terms around how it is similar to if you're going and already having a test done at a normal doctor for any other kind of disease, then I think that really helps people to know exactly what's happening and being very open with how these things work.
Yeah, that's good. You're right. It is an art and a science, isn't it, to talk to non-technical people about technical terms. And I think one of the challenge is making sure that we're getting accurate information to people in the industry who are technologists to have that conversation from the people who are actually creating the app. I know we've seen a lot of independent analysis come through because maybe the technologists aren't getting enough answers from the app providers as well in terms of that safety and security. So, Troy, I just want to go back to your point when you said about limiting what data you are collecting and storing in there. What is considered private data? Where do we draw those lines between whether it's like personally identifiable or not?
That's a really subjective one in some ways. There certainly are legal definitions of what constitutes personally identifiable information. And this is also something which can be different in different parts of the world. In some parts of the world, something like an IP address or a MAC address of a device is personally identifiable. In other parts, it's not. Look, my sort of, I guess, moral compass on this is that personal information is very personal. It's very subjective. I see people very often getting very upset if their email address appears somewhere else, where they say, look, this is private, this is my information. I'll sort of say to them, like, how do you get email? You have to give this to someone else. This is the nature of the way the data works. But I also sort of appreciate the sentiment that this is a piece of information which belongs to the individual and it's up to them to make a decision on. So I think sort of as a baseline, we've got to say, okay, what is the minimum required legal standard in terms of how do we have to treat different classes of personal information? And of course, there are classes of sensitive personal information as well, things like health data or gender or sexuality or this sort of thing. And then from there to my point earlier, it's okay, well, this is the bare minimum, that the bare minimum bar we need to reach. What are the things that we now should do in order to maximize privacy? So, for example, only collecting the things that we actually need in order to run this particular app.
Yeah, that makes sense. Elaine, talk to me a little bit about anonymizing data and some of the challenges we have there, because obviously we're trying to keep this data as safe and secure as we like, but sometimes we do actually need to link it back to a particular patient. What challenges have you seen with that?
Yeah, I mean, you can see right across social media and online, obviously, there's a lot of stats, for example, around how many people have been tested for COVID-19 and numbers of people that are testing positive and negative. Now, to accurately create those numbers, obviously, you actually have to know individual patients and whether they've been tested multiple times or if it's, you know, different people getting tested over and over again. And that's quite a hard balance because, of course, we need to uniquely identify a patient to be able to get the numbers right, but we don't want any of that information to be provided out to any of those public sources because you don't want to actually identify the individual, even though you're wanting to indicate where they have been, and you'll then see some indications where you may need to actually tell the public about a specific location just in case people have been in contact with that particular location and aren't aware of the positive tests that might have happened there. So it's quite a tricky line to kind of keep as much as you can private, but also let the public that need to be aware of some of these situations aware of what's happened.
And I guess that's not helped by the fact that this event really has been a forcing function in terms of bringing these technology projects to light. It's not like it's something that an organization has decided to do that they've got a 5-month, you know, or a 5-year runway for. It's something that's come very quick and fast and we need to act now. So, Elaine, on your particular project, what have been some of those other more unusual constraints on your project and how have you made sure that you've been able to go fast but still go safely into all the testing and get the input that you need?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a huge challenge because traditionally these health projects would have a very long planning period and often a very long development period. And so to be able to do things so quickly, you really need to concentrate on making sure that those user-driven principles are in place. So knowing what you're doing and why and what the key criteria is, but also having those really tight engineering fundamentals. So ensuring every piece that you've built is going to have very, very strong testing, automated deployments, and all those things in place, because you know as soon as that health data starts flowing through a system, things are going to change. And as well, things are going to get very complicated. So you need to be able to make those rapid changes with certainty that you're not going to break such an important system.
Yeah, absolutely. And also getting the right partnerships of making sure that the people on the project aren't just the technologists that know all of that stuff, but we're getting our health professionals and our, you know, anybody else that actually understands the process from a health perspective to make sure that we're capturing the right data and we're putting the things in that we need to put in too. Look, thank you very much, both of you, for your time today. Troy, have you got any final words?
Look, I just hope the technology does help us in some way get through this as fast as possible so I can go out and get a haircut again and get back to normal.
Look, I think we're all hoping for that. How about you, Elaine?
Yeah, look, my fringe is getting in the way, so I'm definitely keen to get out there and get a haircut. But like you said, I think the key is really being careful about who you're listening to. There are a lot of experts out there on the internet, so make sure you're focusing on those health and technology professionals that are partnering together and delivering the solid information out there.
It's interesting being a Microsoft employee and talking to people all around the world about the different levels of restrictions and lockdowns that they have or haven't gone through. And so we just want to thank everybody who has foregone the haircuts and, you know, the trips to go out and socialize to try and stop the spread of this COVID-19 pandemic. To learn more, I want to encourage you to check out the blog post on Microsoft's 7 principles for preserving privacy while addressing COVID-19. You can find that at aka.ms/privacy-COVID-19. Troy and Elaine, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Sonia.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.